Elizabeth wasn't crazy, Roger. A little senile, maybe, but just wasn't like her to go and do something like that.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. I appreciate that.
Now, my wife, she's crazy.
Don't be silly, I understand.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack episode 429, and I'm Scott Johnson. Joined today, reminding the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, in case anyone was confused.
Almost missed it.
Yeah, almost missed it. 429
In case you're
episodes.
Just joining us.
Yeah, if you're just getting here, that's what we're doing. Also with us today, Brian, Mrs. Hooper, it's him, the grocery boy, Dunaway.
Miss Hooper, it's the grocery boy. That's the weirdest thing to announce when you come into a house.
Yep.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hey, Shovel, while we are stuck here levitating in the upstairs bathroom of the house waiting for someone to open the door, I've been doing some serious thinking about how we got ourselves into this situation. I mean, I know I'm just a pair of shrub cutters, but to the best of my reasoning, the house has enchanted us with the gift of life. But what end? I'm still a little fuzzy on why we are trying to murder Roger. I mean, up until this point, I've just been following Axe's lead. Now I'm starting to question things. Like, why Grasshook is hovering up in my personal space? Back up, Grasshook! Jeez. Shh, listen. I think someone's coming. Oh, I hope it's one of those nosy neighbors. I would love to bury myself deep into that Harold guy and watch all the booze shoot out like a freshly tapped keg. Oh, no! I've been gifted with life, but all I desire is murder and mayhem. Axe! In my suffering with a swift swing. And so help me, Grasshook, by the name of the maker of tools, if you don't back up, I'll take you with me. The door's open. Go. Go. Kill everything that moves. Grasshook, get out of the way. Man, you really put the ass in grass. Move.
That's what was going on upstairs.
I want a whole animated short. Of the right. Life of these tools when they're not
life
when
of the
Roger's
animated
not
tools.
Around. That's amazing.
We need a new term. We have the chicken in the bucket, but we also have the waiting to exhale character that we often see hidden in places that are just waiting.
Yeah, waiting to exhale. These freaking craftsman tools that are all just hovering in a room. That's amazing. All right, well done. One of my favorites. Also with us, Randy. I think there are two Chuckies in the chimney, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And that's right, Scott. I'm Randy Deluxe, and I got a deal here for all the viewers at home. You're going to want to pick up the phone and dial the number on your screen right away, because you are not going to want to miss this opportunity of a lifetime. My asking price for this crap is as low as can be, because I don't want it, don't like it. I'm not going to have it in my life. One more minute longer, take it off my hands. This is not going to be mine for much longer. Operators are standing by. Good God. Please don't make me keep this for one more minute longer, please. Thank you. God bless America. Please, back to you.
You know, it always reminds me of Michael Keaton from Beetlejuice. Whenever you
come on down
and do this and that, and when he's in the when he's in Beetlejuice and he's on the
he's on TV stuff. As the right, yes, exactly.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic. With us finally, Brian, get the plunger. Another severed hand clogged the toilet. Ibbit.
If it happens once, it happens a million times.
Yeah.
Hey, look, it's Norm from the Cheers bar. Bull from Night Court's here too. Slumming around in a cheap horror flick. When you're between seasons, what can you do? Believe it or not. Oh, man, I'm going too high. Mm-hmm. I've got my aunt's house, but it's filled with evil spirits. Big rubber demons that would keep Henson screaming. What could it be? Believe it or not, it's a piece of shit.
I'm glad we got the Greatest American Hero theme.
I am too, dude. Nice work.
I was worried that there were going to be three of us doing this.
Yeah, so I thought about it. But I was just like, no.
No, I also realized I cannot sing that high. Yeah,
so good.
For all the listeners at home who are under the age of 40, there was a TV show.
Yeah.
It had such a catchy theme song.
It sure did.
How many people thought, oh, why is he singing the song from Seinfeld from George's Answering Machine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, true story.
Well, those people are under 30, so you have to go right, really back. Exactly. So here's the thing, like... Greatest American Hero, I watched the pilot of recently on Current Geek with Tom, and it's really pretty bad. But there was a time in our collective TV history where that was like the hot thing, and that song shot up to number one and stayed there for weeks.
Little Joey Scarberry.
Yeah.
A great theme song from 1981 that's just catchy, makes you want to sit down and watch it. And then it addressed superheroes, the reluctant superhero, and aliens, and even, you know, some government intervention. So it was everything we needed in the early
80s. It was a fairly early Stephen J. Connell show, and he was still kind of cutting his chops and figuring out how you're supposed to make really entertaining TV. And he did. And this show, Greatest American Hero, actually ended well before House.
Oh, yeah. So, well, at least, let's see.
86 was the final season, so could have been filming.
No, it ended in like 83.
Yeah, no, the 86 thing was a return, and they were trying to pass the baton to somebody else. Yeah, and it didn't work. I'm trying to remember what I learned about that.
I barely remember that.
Yeah.
William Catt is the greatest American hero. You can't have one without the other. It is married. His personality just...
Oh, and that's the thing. Like, if you've seen Greatest American Hero, and now you're watching this movie... He is just that same character.
Yeah.
Like, it's really hard to let go.
That's all he ever did. It's all he ever could do. And it's okay. You got a little typecast as the freak out curly haired guy. And that's just what his job was for a few years in Hollywood until his star started to dim. But he's still around. He does stuff. You'll see him once in a while and things. He's, you know, older guy now. But I always confused him with Wrath of Khan's Kirk's son in there. I always thought they were the same guy for some reason. Yeah, remember
they
him?
Do look very also, similar.
Yeah, they both have curly hair. Let's all just lump those curly hair.
That was basically it.
Kind of the blonde Jufro.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was totally what I thought for years and years and years until I could finally separate them in my head. But yeah, it's William Catt. It's his movie House. He's the star with supporting people like George Wendt and Richard Mall, as mentioned earlier. Richard Mall, a big Utah connection, went to West High School down here in Salt Lake City, and people think about him all the time here for some reason.
Right, Night Court. If you're not familiar with Night Court, such a great touchstone for my childhood.
I love Night Court, and I would love to watch. Is that streaming? I don't think it streams anywhere. I would love to watch.
And
Night
for those Trekkie fans, if you don't remember, Data was on there. Brent Spiner, he was on the Night Court as Ukrainian?
Yeah, he had one.
Was it regular or just one episode?
No, he was on multiple episodes.
Yeah, it was semi-regular.
He wasn't like every week, but he was a recurring character.
Yeah, and it wasn't the whole series either, but there was a chunk of time where he would come in and out. And a lot of fun. Like, if you go back and look, you can find all kinds of great guest stars that went on to do other stuff, but I'd love to watch that right now. But you have these guys from all these three kind of lighthearted shows, maybe the most serious of them being William Catt's Greatest American Hero, but it's not that serious. It was pretty silly.
Yeah.
Kind of a
so
drama.
That's the question about this movie. I think it's a good time to talk about it. What is the flavor of this movie? I wouldn't really call it a genre because it's got flavors of comedy and horror.
Yeah, and it's not as, I mean, you look at stuff like, it's probably like in the same vein as The Frighteners or maybe Gremlins. I guess Gremlins leans more into the comedy than.
Yeah,
but it never,
I think
but
that's
I
close,
think it's a good
though.
Comparison
I think that's
because
a great
Gremlins
comparison.
Gremlins never tongue-in-cheek, you know, it's just incidentally funny.
I mean, there's definitely a genre. Like, it almost feels like they were all trying to make Evil Dead 1 or 2, but they didn't want to go full on. In fact, I'm told I've never seen this. Right, so first time here. Anybody else first time?
First time you were here.
Okay.
Well.
Oh wow, that's shocking.
I'm the only one. I'm the only one out of the four of us who's seen it.
You're the only one who's ever heard of this, and we had to watch it on Amazon Prime. And you need to search hard for this because Amazon wants you to watch 300 hours of a TV show before you're going to find this movie.
Exactly. You have to do a lot of scrolling through House to get to the movie House.
House is a hard thing to find. It's weirdly
it
difficult.
Really is. Probably the biggest misstep they made was calling this House. And it was so forced because I never could figure out why it was the house? What exactly, why did it need to be?
It never needed to be that. I mean, when I make that Sam Raimi comparison, I think it's just a very light version of that. It's not even close in terms of, like, you know, guts and gore and all that. But it's trying to be Poltergeist, but not quite getting all the way there.
Yeah.
It's trying to be Ghostbusters, but not willing to go full on the creature stuff. It's just this weird mishmash of, like, 80s tropey haunted house themes that you saw in a lot of other 80s movies, and I don't know, but I hear, so people tell me the sequel is way more over the top and crazy.
Yeah, the sequels get better cult status than this first one did.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I do feel like it fits squarely in the haunted house subgenre. Like,
sure.
That's right, all sure. It is. There's yeah. not. There's not a deeper story here than this guy is in a house, which, when you wonder why he doesn't just leave, and that's it. He's having he's having mental terrors. He's having physical terrors. That's it. It's a haunted house.
He doesn't leave because his intention was to expel the demons of Vietnam, and he has, just by happy coincidence, fallen into a haunted house that forces you to face your fears. And that's kind of where we're going.
Right.
And every haunted house movie, I think, has to give you some flimsy reason why the people can't leave.
He refuses to run any further.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is the worst I've ever seen. Like, at least when you, I don't know, when you have a big wall that you can't go past, and so you're stuck in the house, or I don't know, all the doors are locked, or all the, I don't know. I thought the film was going to be about him finding his son. I really thought, like, oh, he's not leaving because he's convinced
it was
that
there.
His kid is there somewhere.
Right. And it's such a funny thing, because that's the first point at which the four of us have brought up the fact that his son went missing 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Because it seems like he's forgotten that his son went missing 8 years ago for the first, you know, third of the movie.
He got snapped and he came back at the same age as he was. It was...
And it seemed like they were trying to poke me and say, hey, it's meaningful that this weird freaking swimmer lady has a son that was roughly his kid's age, and that, this will remind him of, and it kind of never did. He just annoyed him. In fact, he said, maybe this kid should just play with a plastic bag. He's like, holy shit, dude, you're the worst dad ever. Even worse babysitter.
Right.
You're bad.
This had a lot of good ideas that never really came to fruition. Mm-hmm.
Well, none of it was scary. If it was supposed to be scary, none of it got me.
It was funny. It was hilarious.
Well, it's, I don't know, hilarious in a... It's the most gif-able movie I've ever watched. I made about 20 gifs. Yeah, we couldn't stop.
Gift the crap
gift the hell out of it. And it's really gif-able, and I don't know why, but there's just multiple scenes of just the stupidest visuals, and they're fun to capture in gifs. But the movie itself has a different meaning in my head, because growing up, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, there are a few posters, VHS covers that are permanently burned in my head. I'd go to a Blockbuster and later a Hollywood Video and, you know, mom and pop places. And House was always there, and it had that memorable doorknob or doorbell being rung by a disembodied
severed hand.
Floating there all decrepit looking and poking the thing.
One of the best looking cover boxes for a scary movie. And I had no idea. I always thought it was super scary. And I thought, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
And I read the cover box and I'm like, this doesn't interest me.
I did the same thing. And part of it was a weird cognitive dissonance, because I would say, that looks scary and freaky, but also Richard Mull and George Wendt are in this? It didn't make sense to me that even existed, and I just never saw it as a result.
And you can't not see them as attempting comic relief, but the attempt is so lame. Like, so Kay Lenz plays the hot neighbor, and this movie loves to just traipse her through in a jogging suit, and everybody stares at her. And then eventually she comes into the house and just dumps her kid on Greatest American Hero.
Right.
And the way she does it is just like out of a sitcom.
It's 100% out of a sitcom.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, this is sitcom 101. It's like, I'm getting...
I know how boys like to play and when they like to work.
Yeah, like he's in the bathroom. There's some funny stuff happening. He flushes the toilet. He comes out. She piles all the stuff on him. And it's like, they played it like a sitcom joke, but it wasn't funny. And it also, it's in the middle of a horror movie, so you're wondering, am I supposed to now be scared for this kid? You know, and like, yeah. it gave me all these feelings that don't go together.
Right, I didn't laugh at that joke because I was too busy laughing at the Addams Family style humor of the hand, like a spider on the kid's back when he came in, and you know, and flushing the hand down. So it was they threw everything into those couple of scenes from TV tropes. They just piled it all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely did. Yeah. I can't say I didn't have fun because I did, but this is not this isn't a great movie and a big stretch at all.
The only great thing about this movie is the puppetry and the makeup stuff they did with Richard Mull in his disembodied soldier zombie thing. That is just some
it's good puppetry. I mean, it looks good until you're close up on his face and you see the mouth inside the mouth moving.
Yeah, but it reminded me a lot of what I loved about Swamp Thing, and that look just
very Swamp Thing. Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to find out who did those effects, and I'm not doing a good job of finding it, but I wonder if it was
Now I'm assuming that was Richard Mull actually in all that makeup.
Yeah, why not?
Right height.
I would assume, but the trivia says that it took three or four people to move it around or something.
Yeah. Right.
So I don't know.
On a dolly.
I don't know what that means.
Three or four people to move him around. On a dolly.
It reminds me of like, it's like cosplay at BlizzCon. There's always somebody with the coolest cosplay. And then what it does, it reminds you that, if this was real life, that person would never move anywhere on their own. Never. Like you got to like have three or four people moving them to get them up, three measly stairs onto a stage. Is a giant ordeal, and they're if they fall, they're dead. Like it's one of those deals. I'm guessing he probably had enough stuff on him where he had to have assistance. Yeah. But for 85, pretty effective. I think the girl one though, the big gnarly one, that's just awful.
Big fat, yeah.
That's awful. Really,
ex-wife witch.
Yeah, that's bad. That was really bad.
That was now that fell into the category of a lot of the 80s horror. Low budget films.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like a beginner puppeteer watching The Dark Crystal and trying to make the
Audrey.
Audra. Mm-hmm. Audra. Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. That's it. That's what it reminded me of. Oh my gosh. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. You know what's great about House 2 is it has the exact same hand hovering in front of the door.
Oh, does it really have the same poster?
Yeah. It's not the exact same poster.
It's got two fingers, right?
It's this. Oh, it's got two. Does it? Hold on.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Oh, no. It's got a key. So it's a hand holding a key going to a key lock, but it's exactly the same perspective. Dirty zombie hand floating.
And I've never seen it, but apparently it doesn't have Norm. It has Cliff.
Yeah, Cliff. John Ratzenberger is in it.
Right.
And it doesn't have, Bill Maher's in it. I don't know who the main dude is, but it's Rich Katz out. He didn't do that one. He was like, I'm not doing two of these. F you guys.
Ari Gross, is that who it was?
I don't know who Ari Gross is.
I don't either. Let's
see. Ari. Oh yeah. No, I know who this guy is. You'd know him. You'd see this face and go, I've seen this face. He was in Minority Report. He was Howard Marks.
Why I was Howard Marks. Oh, jeez. I hate that guy. I can't watch this now.
You're done now.
I don't blame the actors for that film.
He's in tons of stuff. That guy's actually pretty great. But anyway, we may want to stick it in there at some point because the number one thing I seem to get all week on this as we were prepping people for it is they would come back with, you have to watch two. You have to watch two after this. It's so good.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, are there are actually people who've watched any of these?
Yes. Apparently two is just so over the top, like way more Evil Dead.
Is it streaming? Like, do we watch it for a watch along? I mean,
not anytime soon, but yes, Sleepaway Camp 2 also has this phenomenon where the sequel and Trolls 2 these movies are better the second time around, probably because somebody was just looking for a bankable name, and so they kind of loosely try to tie everything in. I don't know if that's what House 2 is all about, but I do know that's kind of how some of these things go.
The guy that directed it in 87 also directed 1998's Children of the Corn 5, Fields of Terror.
The guy did the fifth Children of the Corn movie. I was noticing the sequels. You're talking about House 2, The Second Story. There's another sequel called House 4, The Repossession, but there's no mention of a House 3.
Oh,
so right, we got House 2 and House 4.
Wow. You know what I'm going to do?
Maybe that's the one that jumped the shark.
Maybe. I'm going to give 2 and 4 some credit for some very punny sequel names. I like both of those.
Yeah, yes. The Repossession. So, very good.
It's very
so
good.
So House 2, if you go to the IMDb and you go down to photos, 90% of the photos are from one scene where there's a girl in her panties. So that's what you're getting.
Panty girl.
Just saying, that's what you're getting.
Panty girl.
This is what you signed up for. Great.
Sure.
Great.
Here's some fun trivia. So directed by Stephen Miner. We didn't mention that. It doesn't really matter. He didn't do other things that we all are familiar with, and a few things maybe. But anyway, Kane Hodder, who was the stunt coordinator for this movie. You may know that name or it may seem familiar. Horror fans definitely do. He is one of the – he played Jason Voorhees the most in four films total. So for a hot minute there, I thought also maybe he played the Richard Mall skeleton man, but I don't think so.
So yeah, apparently,
you're probably the right height, right?
Mm,
apparently the movie that is considered House 3 is a movie called The Horror Show, 1989.
The Horror Show?
So interesting. The Horror Show started out its life as House 3, but they decided that...
Well, the House 4 people, what were they thinking, though? They were like, eh.
Right. Yeah, let's go back to the name that got us where we are. Oh, by the way, because I had to look it up, the woman that is walking around her panties in the House 2, all those photos on IMDb, that's Amy Yasbeck. That's John Ritter's widow.
Oh,
really?
Oh, geez.
I did not know that.
Two is company
by the
for
way.
Them. Yeah.
Right. By the way, Ibbot. If you had been growing up during the late 80s or early 90s, you would have you would have went and picked up your Fangoria magazine to get that kind of information.
Oh yeah, Fangoria was awesome, dude. I love that
Fangoria
magazine.
Was awesome.
I would pick those up occasionally.
That was some rebellious.
Fangoria also would have shown us who was inside the bull zombie.
Right.
Movie.
Yeah.
right.
She was on Bad Housewives or whatever it was.
I know she was also in that Problem Child.
I was thinking of Eva Fangoria. Oh, it was a terrible joke, and I'll never make
Eva Fangoria.
Yeah,
I guess.
Get it. Anyway, so Fangoria was this like rebellion point for me. It represented this thing that I could go buy, that seemed what's the word? It was like this dark, like
rebellious,
forbidden
right
thing.
On the-
And my parent, right. my mom would hate it, and I would go get it because my mom would hate it. I didn't even get it because I was a big horror aficionado. I got it because it was like, look at all this gory shit in here.
You just wanted to see the cover on, you know, of the magazine on your desk.
Yeah.
There were some things we wanted as you know, 11 to 13-year-olds, and it was usually like Fangoria, Mad Magazine, Heavy Metal, if they'd sell you one.
Yeah,
Cracked. Those kind of magazines.
Yeah,
Cracked. Absolutely.
Right. Fangoria still publishing? Hold on. I'm curious about this.
You can go to Fangoria.com and you can add a magazine 1-year subscription for $70 because I was just looking.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It is still available. Wow.
I mean, once again, kids, a magazine is this thing where they used to put pieces of paper together.
Right.
And you would buy it.
It seems like Fangoria is like, I can't wait to find out about the new horror movies in a couple weeks when this magazine comes out.
Yeah.
Or I
could
just go to the internet.
Yeah.
Hey, like Randy was describing it. It's just like those papers that were in George Wendt's pocket. That was weird.
Yeah.
Why did he have a whole book in his pocket?
That was so stupid. There were so many times I just wrote down the letters WTF. This guy is on a shoestring budget. Like, he has to go to this house because he can't afford to go anywhere else, right? Yeah. He's been threatened to lose his advance if he doesn't crank out a book really fast. But he gets all scratched up and goes out and buys thousands of dollars of video equipment.
He didn't go out and buy. He ordered it online somehow.
No. There was no online. Oh, yes, there.
No,
was,
no.
All his computer had was the color green. That's how you just know online.
Like, in 1985, that video equipment would have cost you more than the house.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And he sets it all up. And it's just like, why do you need more than two cameras, bro?
Do you need an Instamatic that you're going to have to run over and push the button anyway to take a picture?
So he does that after he gets all scratched up, right? He was in a robe. And he gets all scratched up. So the next day, he sets up all that camera stuff, spends $1 billion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And after he gets it all set up, George Wendt comes barging in. Don't you love that? When someone when someone you just met is suddenly upstairs in your house and it comes barging in, WTF. And William Catt turns and lifts his shirt and says, "What do you see?" And George Wendt should have said, "Well, it looks like your scratches from yesterday have been on you for weeks.
right,
untreated. It was the worst. I'm sorry. It was the worst looking. I don't know what you call this. Like, you know, it's not prosthetics, but it's like worst looking makeup.
It's Sharpie. Yes. That's what it is.
These gouges that should have been still bleeding because he just got them yesterday. You know, right?
Right.
Like, no, they looked.
I'm not going to put any sort of bandage on these things.
Oh no! Yeah, why would you? You need to have those at the ready to show people.
Right.
Yeah, I
gotta show off those 80s abs, right? For William Catt. It's like, oh yeah, look, I work out.
Yeah, he looked all right.
Hey, Greatest American Hero producers, still got it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was out there. You know, it's funny. I keep going back to this thing you said earlier, Randy, that it's the same character, and it really is. And having just watched that show, the pilot of that show, it's fresh in my mind, and it really straight up is the same guy. I don't think he was ever given a role that challenged him out of that space. I think it was always just going to be him, and that was okay, and he had his time, and that's great and all, but it was never going to be more than this, you know? Like, this was it for him.
Right. Speaking of other actors, I was trying to look up the grocery boy who announced himself as Jimmy, Ted, or whatever. It's the grocery boy, James Calvert, the actor. He wins IMDb Best Photo of the Week because it's just the side of his arm from this movie.
It's all. Oh, really? It must be all he ever did. It's a picture of the stairs. It's a
picture of stairs and his arm in the corner.
Oh, that is hilarious. Yeah.
It's unbelievable that this is the photo of it. Like, again, guys, if you're ever on IMDb, just fix your photo. Like, it's so cool that you're on IMDb.
Yeah.
He's been a pretty good bit of things.
Yeah. Oh, no. He's been around, done things.
It's funny. You'd think that they'd have a better photo. But yeah, his second photo is him running out of the room with hanging grandma in the foreground. I mean, it's, you know. You kind of want to assume that this is the picture that's also on their SAG card.
Yeah.
right.
I always think that the kid at the beginning there, the grocery kid, was the, is related to, now what's his name? He played Robin in the Batman and Robin movie.
In the nipple
Robin. Shit. I can't think of his name.
O'Donnell.
Chris O'Donnell. There you go.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's right. Yeah, he looks just like him. And at first I thought it was him, and then my brain went, no, wrong timing. That he'd be much younger than this here. So who is this?
It'd be crazy if that was him.
I thought it was his brother or something or some relative.
It is like the tropiest of tropes, though. The whole, like, I'm coming to a house. I'm knocking on the door. No one's answering, but as I knock, the door slowly opens, and I'm just going to walk in. And then I discover the thing.
He's a grocery boy. He has the right. Well, no one will question me.
Yeah, but he does have the right, and he also does have the tropiest grocery bag, which has it didn't have a loaf of bread sticking out the top, but it did have lettuce sticking out the top. So that's
I do love a trope. I love a tropey grocery bag. That's awesome.
It's a bottle of wine
because it's such an afterthought. It's such an afterthought. No director or writer is going to focus too much on it. They're just like, well, just have a little bit of produce sticking out the top. Everyone will know.
We need to show the groceries. How do we show the groceries?
You can have anything in that bag if you don't show the groceries.
I would also say, and I think that scene establishes this for the rest of the movie, it's daytime horror. This is not a nighttime horror movie. Everything happens in broad daylight or, you know, in the house.
Very, very well lit, yeah.
And even, there's, yeah. Yeah, there's
even,
never
even a, the midnight scenes.
Right.
The descending into down the rope scene is super dark, and it's just useless. Like, the whole sequence, I'm just like, okay, he's hanging from a rope.
Yeah, but stop motion demon pterodactyl with a flip the gun around and fire.
Oh, yeah.
That was awesome. I love that.
It was Bat Boy with wings is what it was, right. And I loved it. I thought that entering the void scene was it was such a juxtaposition to the brightly lit everything. And I thought it was great.
Yeah.
There ain't nobody who can do that on a rope except Greatest American Hero. No author of novels, no writer of words like that.
Yeah,
right?
Nobody's who's got multiple published, you know, top New York bestsellers is going to act like that.
Yeah,
I'll tell you who does a great creepy old lady, and that's Susan French.
Remind me the one that grins. She's like the aunt or the sister or whatever. I guess the sister of the.
The old woman who kills herself.
No, not. Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant the one that was there later that smiled at the cop. Is that the same lady?
Yeah, that's her. That's the
flashback.
That's the aunt.
That scene confused me. That was her. Okay.
That was her. And that was the basically the flashback of, you know, when they lost their son and she's in there.
Here's like, the thing, though.
Right.
Here's the thing.
They're bad at
in
flashbacks.
In all the flashbacks, yeah, they were really bad because William Catt doesn't look 8 years younger in any of them
right.
at all.
Yeah, right.
That bothered me and that in the Vietnam scenes because the average age, as we know, was none of 19, thanks to the song. And those guys were like way older.
Yeah, especially Richard Mall just did not look like he belonged in Vietnam at all.
Yeah.
I agree. By the way, I picked up this awesome piece of trivia about Richard Mall.
Oh, sweet. What do you got?
So something that you may not know, if you've never spent any time in Utah, is that for a long time, they've had their own Mormon film industry. Mm-hmm. And it's very insular, and they make movies for people to watch about Mormonism, about the Mormon family life, and so on. And there's this whole series of movies. And Richard Mall starred in one called Brigham.
Yep. He played Brigham Young.
He played Joseph Smith.
Oh, Joseph Smith. Hmm. You're right. I got that backwards.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
And that's just amazing on several levels.
Right.
Yeah.
But the main one is that he played Joseph Smith and he is 6'8".
Yeah, it's a horrendous thing. I've never seen it, but you're right about this. So there's like this, you know, the Kirk Cameron movies that are like the Christian movie thing. Yeah. There's that whole thing. Here, there is a small and not nearly it used to be kind of a big deal. Like in I'd say the late 90s, early aughts, everybody was rushing out to see these movies that everybody culturally felt like, oh, this is kind of about us. Let's go see these. And they were super pandering and they sucked and it's all bad. But that particular one may have been close to the nail in the coffin for the whole movement. Like, it was so badly received, and everybody could not believe Richard Mall was in that role, that I think that may have just been it for the whole idea. Like, the best one out here, is, in my opinion, is this. It was there was a movie called Church Ball. And Church Ball. This is a very, this again, very local cultural thing, but man, Mormons love their basketball. They love it. Every church has a basketball full-size court in it. Everybody plays basketball all the time during the week. There's young men's basketball. There's old guy basketball. Girls are playing basketball. Everybody's playing basketball all the time. And it's known for being highly hyper-competitive, very competitive, very nose-to-nose, angry parents, that kind of stuff. It has this reputation. Yeah. So they made this thing called Church Ball, and it had Fred Willard in it as the bishop of the congregation there. And they had Arnold, who played Arnold?
You in Different Strokes?
Yeah, Different Strokes. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. The little guy. What you talking about, Willis? I can't think of his name.
Gary Coleman.
Gary Coleman. Gary Coleman was in this thing. And that was the movie. It was super stupid, by the way. Not even really that funny. I love Fred Willard, but it wasn't great. And he ended up loving it so much out here that he bought a house in this area called Santaquin and lived here till he died. And that was great because I got to run into him at a restaurant once, and he was a giant dick. So I walk in there. Right. Oh, yeah. He was such a butthole to everybody who was like, oh, look, it's Gary Coleman. It's Gary Coleman. Hi, I loved your stuff. I love you on TV and things. Yeah. Keep moving. He'd say things like that. He was just a little rat.
He was a security guard by that time. So, I mean, wouldn't that be the mentality he should have?
I don't know. He was really, there was some stuff there, man. And then when he died,
if I was dealt the hand that he was dealt, I mean, and all the crap I'm sure he's heard. I mean, what you talking about, Willis, in his face 24/7 for many years.
I mean,
I'd probably be bitter too.
That's partly why I moved to Santa Quinny. The word was that this was his final escape from all of that. He didn't have to face his.
Keep going, you freaks.
This contract he virtually signed for a lifetime of being teased for being a child actor or whatever.
And they kind of approached that in this movie. They approached that whole fandom in house with our writer here having to deal with these really. This parade of 80s freaks who was coming into his face.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out, was there a Billy Idol lookalike in there? What was he supposed to do?
There was, yeah. Like it was a leather jacket wearing blonde hair dude, kind of a sneer. And then you had over exuberant, overweight lady, and you had creepy low talker dude. I'll treasure this forever. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, you know. again, this movie leans so heavily on the tropes and just doesn't even care.
No, yeah. It's just like, beautiful. here's a trope, enjoy.
Yeah. I want to say one other thing about LDS movies, because people so often they so often say this cynically, like, for decades they've been, you know, like Mormon Hollywood has been making these movies because they're so insular. Like, if you're really into that culture, you're not allowed to see Hollywood movies. So there had to be this other thing for you to watch. This is like, and
that is horseshit, by the way. But yeah,
exactly. It was because there was a captive market, and there were lots of people who wanted to make movies of a specific type, of a real
kind. It's also just relatable. That's all it is. It's like, well, it's the same reason people listen to Film Tech. I love movies. These guys talk about crappy movies I love. I like this show. Like, it's like that. It's except in a more broad way.
I love our listeners. They talk like this.
And some of them broke out of that bubble. Like movies like God's Army or The Other Side of Heaven were made as an LDS movie and broke out. Like, Other Side of Heaven has Anne Hathaway, and like, that's an early opportunity for a great performer to perform in a film. And then in the last few years, it's gone crazy. And I'm telling you, you've got to look into some of these things. There are some LDS movies called Saints and Soldiers that are awesome. Like, they're making real exciting war films in Salt Lake City. Seriously, like, so the Saints and Soldiers series is, I don't know how many movies anymore. And they've got awesome names, you know, like subtitles. Like, right. I don't know, Saints and Soldiers.
Oh, yeah, big time. Saints and Soldiers was the most mainstream one. That thing got, like, it had, I think the cinematographer is like a Spielberg guy. Tagged around with him all the time.
And there's one called Saints and Soldiers Airborne Creed.
Yeah, it's a dumb dumb sequel.
That's so cool, though. Like, there's this whole world of movies that a lot of people just don't know about.
And you don't need to for the most part, although Saints and Soldiers is actually pretty good. It's just imagine a World War II movie where there's one of the characters' faith is a part of the story. That's all those are really lightly. I wouldn't even put them in the same Mormon Hollywood category, but the ones that are like about missionaries or the ones that are, you know, very specific cultural references or something. I think we're done with those. They don't really do those anymore. I mean, I say that, but there's a sequel out right now and it's only showing locally. That's a sequel to something that they made in the '90s. And I don't know why it even exists. So I guess that's still happening, but it's nothing like it was. Like, this was God's Army, that whole era, which was whenever that was. It was huge for a little while. Like, but it was absolutely not a trend. What's the word?
A fad.
Fad. Thank you. It was a fad. Everyone kind of moved on from it. So anybody still doing that is sort of, you know, doing it against the wave. Yeah,
they've more moved on to dog reincarnation movies.
Yeah, I'm into those. Sure. Those are great. Right. I love
House women. Five, The Missionary Trip. That's what we need.
That sounds all right. Anyway, hey, check this out. You want to know the gross thing I thought? I have a gross thing.
Oh, hold on. I think it's not him putting the rubber hand in his mouth and biting it.
No, that's fine.
I think it has to do with William Cat's mouth.
It does have to do with William Cat's mouth, yes.
Touching fish teeth and then putting your finger in your mouth?
Nope, but also, oh, there you go. And this is a gross thing across the board. When people have a cut on their finger and they suck their own blood.
Why do people do that?
I hate it. It's not just movies. I know people who do it in real life. And when I see it, I want to run the other direction as fast as I can. I cannot stand it. It is so gross to me.
Guys, listen to me. This is an important PSA. Don't put your mouth microorganisms into an open wound on your skin.
I mean, I have. Look, I've got blood in me, but I don't want blood in me. You know what I mean? Like,
right. There's two levels of inside me, and one level is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Once it's been decided that this is blood that's leaving my body, I don't need to put it back in.
Right.
If this is in the tubes of the body that carry the blood, that's fine, but not the digestive tubes.
Yeah, that doesn't belong there. It shouldn't be in my mouth. It should not be all over my face or my hands. I shouldn't have blood anywhere near those places. So don't be doing that. If you got a cut, what you do, here's what you do. You go run it under cold water in the faucet, which will help you kind of coagulate and seal that thing up. Mm-hmm. Plus, it'll help. It'll numb it. And then you go get yourself a Band-Aid. And then you're done for the day. That's it.
Right.
You don't drink it. You don't turn around and go, oh.
I'm keeping this inside. Blood outside bad.
Yeah. Blood inside good.
Blood inside good.
Yeah. It's so sick to me. Ugh. It's just, it's a thing I've always had. So this movie just brought it out again.
Yeah.
There was,
yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I knew it would bother Scott.
Yeah. I also, well, whatever. Don't drink your own blood, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah. Drink
But you have a, there's got to be a word for mouth phobias, right? Putting things in your mouth. And there's got to be a word for that. What's the word? Having something in your mouth phobia.
Is that oral fixation?
There you go. Oral, yeah. I bet it's oral phobia or something like that.
Well,
oral,
it's not just anything in your mouth.
Foreign oral.
I put toothpicks in my mouth. I put food in my mouth. I chew my own nails sometimes.
Right.
Usually I just start them with my teeth and then tear them off with my hand, but it's a bad habit.
Yeah.
No,
that's gross.
It is. It's a bad habit and it's gross. You're right. It's gross. But it's not like I've got this thing with all sorts of stuff in your mouth. I don't care about any of that. Right. It's just your own blood. Here's what doesn't go in your mouth. Blood, urine, poo, or earwax. Don't put, or boogers. Don't put any of that in your mouth.
Boogers, yeah, boogers bad. How about scabs? Can you put scabs in your mouth?
No. Oh my gosh, no.
I guess this is blood. Yeah, I guess.
No bodily excretions of any kind go in your mouth.
Blood and platelets and.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Is a fingernail a bodily excretion? Because people put that in their mouth all the time and it freaks me out.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't put, so when I bite my nails, and the nail is never in my mouth.
It doesn't. Well, it's in your mouth because it's in, like it's between your teeth, and your teeth are in your mouth.
Yeah, so I
but it doesn't stay in your mouth.
Right,
it doesn't, but you don't digest it.
Yeah,
but
I don't rip it off and go, this nail is so good. Right. I don't do that.
Right.
I don't even spit them out. I start them with my teeth, and then I kind of pick at them with my finger. It's gross. I know.
God, I love doing this podcast.
But if you got any kind of blood, pus, gunk, gook, got goo, bro, whatever coming out of your body, do not put it back in.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
How can pus be a part of your body, but still be so get it away from me?
Well, it's important. It's important to your body. Like it helps. It's the fight. The fight is happening in real time when you see pus. Like you are surviving because your white blood cells are going down.
Grosser than the whole movie we watched.
So we should see that and go, oh, that's great. Look at all this infection. This is good because our body's fighting off this infection. But really, it's disgusting. Right.
Yeah. I agree with you, Dunaway, but this conversation's way more entertaining.
It had to be had.
Yeah, it is.
You know who I loved in this movie?
What?
I loved Harold's dog. Because they never flat out said, hey, look, this is Harold's dog. But the dog was constantly being just as invasive as Harold.
And you occasionally see Harold with the dog. It's used for one purpose, to run around with the hand in its mouth. And
right. Tear out
and
the
when
trash.
We first... When we first meet Harold, he's walking the dog, and as we're about to cut away from that scene, he says, okay, let's go, boy. And then the dog barks, okay. And it was like, and it's like, whose dog does that? And I thought about it. I was like, okay, nobody's dog does that, but you really should train your dog to respond to you every time you talk, because that's really funny.
Mm-hmm. Right. I couldn't find a cat in the bucket. I'm sorry, a chick in the bucket. I did find a cat in the bucket, I guess. That's the only thing. They very clearly showed that the ant had a cat outside, and he ran away. But
you mean in the very opening, scene when they're walking around the house?
Right, because you have to have that if it's a scary movie.
Right. Sure. You think it was her cat? I mean, it was just on the porch.
It
could be neighborhood cat. But it is that I've actually made note of that because I was impressed that. Because it's a single long shot of the camera going around the house, and then just as they round the corner, the cat runs across, and they add a little sound effect of the same meow that you hear in every other movie. But the timing, and then you go around that alcove, and there's not a space where there could be a PA pushing the cat, or like a box where the cat was kept being tipped over.
You're suggesting a possible happy accident that they were coming around, tracking around the house, and suddenly cat runs out and says, perfect, add some Foley work to that, we're done.
It's a well-trained cat that somebody's off to the side saying, here, kitty, and then the cat runs across.
It's a well-trained cat.
Seriously. Or it's a cat that doesn't like cameramen.
Right.
I'll bet you you didn't have laser pointers then, but I'll bet you could just train it with
make life so much easier.
you know, like with a fishing fly, you know, like one of those things.
Oh yeah, just... yeah. They had a lot of good fishing references in here. Could have done that. So I was just glad that they didn't go any further, because a lot of movies, especially horror movies, feel like they need the cat jump scare. So I kept waiting for the cat to jump out of the medicine cabinet, because he was constantly opening doors. Also, by the way, our character, our hero, I've never seen somebody rifle through drawers so often as this man, just angrily jerking drawers open and rifling through.
It's because his aunt doesn't keep anything where you think she should.
Nothing.
I absolutely love
good sound effect, by the drawer rifling sound effect, by the way.
I absolutely love these big Victorian houses. I love that this has become the staple of all, you know, horror movies. I think it's a little bit overused. Like, as soon as I saw the house, I was like, oh, right, another one of those.
Yeah.
You know, like it, and it's not, it's not just horror movies, but it's also comedies, right? You kind of feel like you're looking at Full House or Money Pit or something like that, you know? So like, it's a little too obvious. I don't know.
Right.
I
just, right. And that's a good point. And I want to just mention, I don't know if it's because I live in a certain area and I'll always have my entire life, and there's a lot of ranch style houses here. I have never lived or been anywhere where I stayed the night where there is an opportunity for me to climb out of a window and onto the roof. Mm. Is that common in other areas that you guys live? Yeah, do you guys live in areas like that? I've never experienced it. I've always been curious, but that's always how people seem like there's a lot of escapes through the roof by jumping out a window a lot of times in movies.
Yes, my first girlfriend in high school lived in a house
right
where you could go. Like, the weirdest thing was the best escape onto the roof was out of the upstairs bathroom, which was just bizarre. Like I'm gonna go to the bathroom, and then
I'm stalking people in the roof.
Yeah, right. No, you just like exit. Like, there's a huge window. And
right.
You just go right out, and now you're on the roof, and now you just hop down into the backyard, and off you go.
Interesting.
Well, there you go.
So foreign to me. Just so foreign, because I've never experienced it, and I can never relate. I know it's a trope in the movies all the time, but I've just never experienced it.
You just got to live somewhere where there's older houses. These,
right.
These, like I say, these Victorians were built in, you know, the earlier 20th century.
And if you don't have one of those, then you've got to have a trellis that can support the weight of a human. Right. That goes up conveniently right next to the daughter's window.
Right.
I could not figure out how the grandma hung herself. Every time I see that room, I'm like, what was the rope hanging from?
She didn't have beams, so she would have
I didn't even think of this. You're right.
I didn't either. No ceiling beams, fan, maybe?
Maybe.
It looked
like it wasn't in the center of the room.
She hung herself from a light fixture, but I'm sorry. Those things don't hold more than 10 pounds.
No, plus there was no stool or anything underneath her. Like, how'd you get up there? That's a good question. Well, it's a haunted house. Anything's possible.
You're supposed to believe that the ghosts did it. Like, she didn't want to die, but the ghosts hung her.
Tricked her.
Which is fine. But the movie just doesn't have an internal consistency about what the spirits are after and what they can do.
Right. By the way, that actress we were talking about earlier, Susan French, we've seen her in Flatliners as the terminal lady. The terminal lady that dies and makes Julia Roberts sad and decide to do the Flatliner. Sad.
Yeah. You gotta do it. You gotta check it out. You gotta flatline. It's the best.
Did you did you guys notice? I don't know if I was the only one, but the pool that he found us, or that went with his son was in the pool. The pool that was out in the grotto looking thing.
Right.
That looked like the Playboy Mansion grotto pool. I was sure of it.
Right, with the rocks and the.
I was sure of it. In fact, I went down this dark hole looking around, like, Where can I find this? And I was looking up all these websites trying to find out. Where's a picture of the grotto?
It's 2 a.m. Why are you looking at porn?
I was looking at...
How did you get there?
I actually got to a point where I had a photo of the grotto up next to a screen cap from the movie where he's in there with the kid. Really? And I'm still not totally sure that it's not
that
the grotto.
It's not the grotto.
It's hard to say for sure because the angles are slightly different, but it just reminded me of anytime you've ever seen that grotto, which is always in some video or, you know... some old newsreel of freaking half the people at Studios 51 stopped by the Playboy Mansion today and Mm-hmm. Look at the ladies prance around, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. It looks
look how
just
thick
like
the
it.
Water's getting.
Yeah. Look how viscous.
How viscous.
Yeah.
That's gross.
That's your thick and liquid right there.
I do like that we both went right to viscous too. That's good.
Yeah. Did anyone else notice George Wendt seemed to have a weird sunburn on his head the whole movie? Was that just me?
I thought that was that alcoholics rosacea thing that happens.
Oh, is that a thing? Much, I don't know what that is.
Too much alcohol creates the
It was mostly his forehead. It was like his forehead had a white.
That's because he was sleeping most of the time. He was sleeping almost entirely. They actually shot him when he was on that one mattress. That was where he was at actually the whole time. He didn't even have like a dressing room. That was his thing. Mattress.
It's because anytime you're not seeing George Wendt in this movie, he's at Cheers.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Sorry. Norm.
Norm. Right. Hey, by the way, that's funny you say that. Did we ever see Wendt's wife in this? We never did, right?
No, because did we imply that she had left him?
No, I thought he said she was still with him, and we just never got to see her. And it made me think, is that just in George Wendt's writer that any role he has, the wife, like Vera, was never seen
right? True story.
On Cheers. Wow. So maybe he can never show his character's spouse.
Well, he was sleeping alone when he did that weird wake up thing where he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that was another one of those sitcom moments.
Yeah.
What is that noise?
And he's clutching, hard fisting a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
Like that thing is attached to the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
And then he wakes up and he's jumping up, fighting, swinging around a fire poker.
Yeah.
And sloshing around Jack Daniels.
Disembedded mattress. Just on the floor.
Right. Doesn't mean, yeah. That, yeah. If,
don't
if
like
you're
it.
Sitting flat on the floor, something
about
not
it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Everything
that,
about
and
that.
And was that grandma's, like, did she just have a room that just had a mattress in it? Or did
no,
he put, I guess,
no, no.
I guess he put that in there when he was doing all the cameras.
Yeah.
Well, he brought in because he was using that, cats. He was using that as a shield.
It was the
when
stake.
He was opening
up. Oh, right. Yeah. That's right. Yep. Okay. Yeah.
That creature sucked. That was a dumb creature.
I disagree. Yeah. That creature was awesome. It was the monster of war or something. It had all the
faces.
Hit.
That I kind of liked, right? All the faces. Yeah. In there. Yeah.
I don't know.
I liked it. And I liked how it was kind of weird because when I watched it, I rewound it because I was like, okay, I want to see what else is on there. It's amazing how slow that lumbers out of the closet because I thought it was a jump scare, but it wasn't really. It
how slow the production assistant pushes it out on a dolly,
right.
You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a super slow. It's just like,
it wasn't supposed to be the same creature as the tentacled one inside the mirror, right? That's a different creature.
No, I think that, there was the mirror void was totally different creatures than anything else.
Yeah. Cause when he was first getting pulled into it was some kind of octopus tentacle stuff grabbing him. And then when he went in, it was that flying demon.
You're thinking of closet creatures, totally separate from mirror creatures.
I just think it's one of the things that I don't like about haunted house movies is that the creatures should not be affected by physical weapons. So when he is like cutting at it with his straight razor and it's working, I'm just sort of annoyed. Because
I am too.
It's are you really there then or not? Because a minute ago you weren't really there, and so you're all just an apparition to scare people. You shouldn't be affected by a blade, and that annoys me.
So the question I kept coming to me as I was watching this film was obviously our Vietnam vet who's having these hallucinations is being influenced by the house, and once he finds his son, did he actually find his son?
I don't know.
What do you mean? You mean, we see him with the son at the end. Do you mean, is that really his son?
Yeah.
Or
is that really his son? Or is that some, evil entity that is masquerading?
If it is, it would be setting up the second movie fairly well. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I guess so. I don't know. I hate
sometimes
that kind of stuff.
Dead is better and you don't want it to come back.
Dead is better.
We've seen this.
What did you guys, so we talked, I think recently on the show about movies that we all, maybe it was another show, but we all talked about movies that we saw when we were kids that really freaked us out because we were kids.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And you see it now and you go, oh, big deal. That's stupid now. But at the time it really, freaked you out. Brian was talking about his first time the other day on TMS watching, Poltergeist. Yeah.
And what
freaked you out and you had to leave the theater for a minute and come
I
back.
I did.
And
under the auspices of having to go pee, like, I'm going to go pee.
Clown?
It was the clown. It was 100% the clown.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Totally the clown. In fact, I think Dunaway, you were on that day. We were doing Battle Royale. I think.
I might have been, but I don't think I was part of that conversation. No. But I do do remember. I know several people who were younger than, and the clown freaked them out. It really did. Yeah. It never bothered me.
That was with Gidget.
Right.
Yeah,
she's doing movie trivia. So the reason I bring that up is this feels like one of those movies for a certain generation absolutely. Of kids. Like, had I seen this when it was new, I think it would have freaked me out. But even more so if you're a 7 or 8 year old kid. At the time, in the year 85, this would have been that one you'd point to. And sure enough, got like, I don't know, half a dozen tweets going, oh, this movie scared me so bad when I was younger and all that sort of thing. I'm like, please watch it again so you can remove it from your life because it's not scary at all.
Yeah.
It totally would have if I'd seen it at the time.
Yeah.
It would have just blown my mind with fear because for me at that time, the movie was The Blob. Mm-hmm. And it was on TV, so it was The Blob edited for broadcast television on a Saturday afternoon. Like, think about how that must not have been actually objectively scary at all.
Right.
But I was a little kid, and it terrified me.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. It's totally different. It's totally different when you grow up. It's doesn't take long. Doesn't take long for us to get bitter, turn teenagers, and it's like, that's not scary.
Mm-hmm. Ah. She is scary. Yeah,
I'll show you scary.
Show me scary.
STDs.
Oh,
so those are STDs scary. From that fat fake Audra puppet.
Yeah,
lady.
Right, right.
Gotta watch out for
that. She had some sores that I was not interested in. Yes.
By the way, see, while we're talking about her and seeing this when I was 15 years old in the theater, that was the point. I think I may have talked about this last time on the show where, the Audra puppet is the fake wife puppet is out there. He shoots her on the.
Patio
or the porch. She goes down, and then all of a sudden, it's his ex-wife, and he goes up to like touch her and see if she's dead. And it's at that point somebody in our theater says, "She's still warm," implying that
dead necrophilia is okay.
She's still warm. Mm.
That's hilarious.
Hey, you remember the Chet Parker character that was selling the house? That guy with the mustache that almost shot him with a thing. We know that actor from other stuff, but Dennis Franz was almost that guy.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. That would have been great.
That's funny. So that is a piece of trivia that I would totally believe. You know, it's always like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis were considered for the role of Roger.
Yep.
But that Dennis Franz, that is a believable one. Somebody's figured out how to rate these so that they seem plausible.
Well, let's see if this is plausible. This was a almost happened piece of trivia. According to Fred Decker, the script was originally inspired by Twilight Zone, the movie from 83, a couple years previous. Mm-hmm. After seeing that film, Decker and his friends, which included Ethan Wiley, Steve Miner, and Shane Black, what's his name? Deadly. Lethal Weapon, Lethal Weapon movies.
Plus
other stuff like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and Iron Man 3 stuff. Anyway, Shane Black. Planned to make their own independent anthology movie on video, but the project was never completed. Decker used the idea for his unproduced segment for the film. So he was going to make an anthology series and a segment for Twilight Zone, it sounds like, or at least he'd pitched one. None of it got taken or got, none of it stuck. And that was this. Right. So what we are and in a way, it kind of makes sense now, like tonally.
Yeah.
This feels like a Twilight Zone segment.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the kind of lots of ways, like how discordant it is with the humor, and one moment you're supposed to be terrified, the next moment it's like that weird music, that horrible cover song in the movie behind him while he's burying all the body parts.
You're no good.
Yeah, yes. from the worst sounding cover art. Like that is so bad.
Yes, that is definitely we really could not afford to get the Linda Ronstadt version and do as close as you can to even her improvisations during the song of the
that's it. It was just terrible.
I enjoyed it. It added to the direction in which I needed to see this film. It's like, okay, do I need to take this film a little more serious, or do I need to hear this song? Yes, I need this song. It falls towards cheesy, and I like it. It fits what we're presenting here.
Something else I thought about, Randy, I didn't mention this yet. I meant to. The kid, the second kid, the sexy ladies,
babysit kid,
Mary Stevens' kid.
He looked a lot like Will to me. For some, younger Will, but like, you know,
He was the director's son in real life. And, you know, you do that, right? You need a,
absolutely.
You got one right there at hand, you know?
Yeah. He was really crying at one point and pissed me off. Yeah. Made me mad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wasn't
like
acting.
Because he was making him watch that stupid soap opera. And the, and the actor kid didn't even want to watch that stupid soap opera.
Plus, in the '80s, you know, we used to do in the '80s, of course, that was still, we still probably could tell him his dog was dead or something, you know, right?
Yeah, when if you have a baby, you're like, we need this baby to cry in this scene. Pinch it. Right. Like,
pinch it.
Yeah, that's not good. I don't know why kids cry in older movies. When they do, it really upsets me.
What Harold Roach had, like, all kinds of horror stories, right? From Little Rascals.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to. So that's awful.
Scott, my favorite piece of trivia is is one of the alternate titles. You know, like, when movies are released in other regions, they often give them different titles completely. Mm-hmm. In Hong Kong, this movie's title was Don't Go Into the Haunted House After Midnight.
That's the title,
the name of the movie.
That's actually a better title and more descriptive, because after midnight is when that one apparition always shows up. They never really said why, but it was like clockwork, literally. And so that actually gives me more joy than just house.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
House.
Dr. House. That's what this is about. Oh, MD. We have a chick in the bucket, by the way. Chick in the bucket.
Oh, good.
Swedish swimsuit lady. We're done. She's out.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she took her kit and she was out.
Yeah, babysat the kid. Done.
Mary Staven, right?
Yeah. That role was useless. Nothing
absolutely
good.
It was. Yes. It was
just comedy relief.
It was not useless. It gave me great joy to see her crazy smiling face from the first time you see her when she's just running by and just asking the weirdest questions. It gave the movie such an uncomfortable feeling that I just don't think would have been there without having her there and George Wendt leering at her.
Is that a sapling?
Right. Is that a sapling?
Just the worst representation for women, anyone of color. Like the closest you got were the guys that dropped like flies in Vietnam and they just were there to stand up for a second and then fall over as if Richard Mall was just tearing them all to pieces.
What about Mindy Sterling's role? I thought she was fairly fun as one of the rabid fans in the line.
Oh, that line is great. I liked the line.
Yeah.
That was great. I didn't know Mindy Sterling was in that. She's in that? Who is that?
That was her.
Sterling, who does Scott in Austin Powers?
Yes, correct. Correct. Oh, that was her in line.
No way.
Yeah.
She
was
in
the bookstore. She was, so much fun.
Woman in the bookstore. I made a gif of her freaking out.
Yeah.
Oh, look at her. She's lovely. Well, how does she?
She's a lovely lady.
How does she look like that? Those other people, but then look like she's beautiful.
Oh, yes.
I'm a little blown away.
Makeup.
I mean, I just, you know, expected her to not look like that for some reason. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Austin Powers, gold member, all that stuff. And then she was in this. So there you go.
There you go.
Does a lot of voice work, looks like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Still does voice work.
Yeah. Mm. Gold. She's on the Goldbergs, plays Linda Schwartz. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. She's one of the Yentas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's kind of great. What a cool little career she's having. all right. You want clips? I have clips from it.
This movie. Oh, my God. How did you have time to capture all the clips?
Well, to be honest, I didn't find too many that were just like great. Oh, so
it's more of a visual. The film is way more visual, but still there's like
10 clips here or something, but I'll play them for you. Here's this realtor dude who was almost Dennis Franz walking around.
This will make a great guest house. Bathroom over there, knock through a door, hot tub, jacuzzi. Kitchenette goes here. Hey, you know, got a nephew named Monty's in the construction business. Works cheap. He could do a heck of a job with this place. Worst comes to worst, person could lease out the big house and move in here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And the phrase is worst comes to worst.
Yeah.
Because, it's not worst comes to worse.
That's true, right? Isn't that the right way to say it?
Worst comes to worst. Because you're saying, something bad just got to the worst it could be.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. People get that wrong all the time.
And who was that actor? Because he was in a lot of TV shows during that time.
His name is, hold on, I have it right
always,
here.
His
name is Michael
kind of
Michael Enzine or Enzin. He said played Chet Parker. He was, hold on a second. He was in Ghostbusters, Titanic, yeah, Solaris, yeah. War lots Games, stuff. Lots of
he
stuff.
He always plays this role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a judge a lot on TV.
Oh, he's so judgy. What was he in Ghostbusters? Hotel manager. Oh, right. Yes.
Yeah.
I had no idea it'd be so much.
Right.
I'm not paying it.
Right. Yes.
It's also one of our Star Trek connections. He played Lojal in this episode, Forsaken.
Lojal.
Yeah.
Huh.
Of DS9.
He was a voice. Did voices for BioShock 2.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He had a lot of stuff. Holy cow.
Yeah, he's busy. A lot. Busy bee. Mm-hmm. Here's some angry acting.
That's the house. Will you shut up? Will you shut up just for once, you old bat?
You ever call an old person an old bat?
Yes.
Yes, all the time.
Not lately, but yes.
Yeah. No, I usually call a middle-aged person an old bat. Yeah. That's like one of those things, you know, where you don't use it for the intended purpose. Right.
Why is it bat? Why bat? Is it just like an old bat?
Because bats are wrinkly.
I guess so.
And they're all up in your face. Get in my face, you wrinkly bat.
Well, there's that scene in Seinfeld where he runs away with the marble rye and he calls her and he goes, let go of the bag, you old bat. No, he goes, let go of the rye, you old bag. He called her a bag in that.
Bag, yeah. Right. Maybe that's a misheard thing. This has kind of morphed over time because both ways, I guess, kind of makes sense, I suppose.
I kind of like old bag. I think bag's
and that bad. Woman, by the way, Kay Lenz, I mean, she's just got the most classic 70s, 80s, what we said was a hot woman look.
Yep. She really did.
Kind of the Farrah Fawcett, you know, amalgamation of maybe five Charlie's Angels all into one kind of thing.
Yep. What's her name from WKRP's in there a little bit?
Yes. Or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Lonnie Anderson.
Yeah.
Lonnie Anderson.
I like the.
Well, her character was Jennifer Marlowe, but.
Sure.
I just asked Google to fill in the blank, you old blank. And Google decided it was either you old coot, you old sailor, or you old so and so.
Does you can play fill in the blank with your Echo?
No, with his he's talking
no,
about
I just
his
went to Google
browser.
Oh, yeah, Google.
Google. Oh, yeah. Google.
You old what now?
Yeah. Oh,
I was really hoping that if you did that with your Echo, it'd go wink, ba dee doo 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 doo, wink,
bump, ba dee doo doo.
As you waited, yeah.
Mine say, you old coot, you old sailor you old meme, you old so-and-so, you old gif, you old sailor you gif, you old fart, you old town road, and you old scutter.
Oh, you old town road. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. What's an old scutter? Let's look that up.
You old scutter.
That sounds like a boat term.
It does.
Scutter.
By the way.
It's a crazy, annoying old person is what it says. Sorry, go ahead, Randy. Go ahead.
I cannot remember the last time a song was number one as long as Old Town Road has been.
Oh my gosh.
Well, really no, that's it got is, the record. It's
oh
it
my
is,
gosh.
It has beaten Mariah Carey and One Sweet Day, whatever that
I can't stand it. I feel like the world's gone insane. I think it's a bad song. I don't understand what's happening.
This song is fine. It's just fine. We've met maximum usage of it. I'm in a line the other day. And the lady behind me gets a phone call, and that's her ringtone.
Yeah, that makes me want to die. I want to die when I hear that.
So, and then at work, I got asked, like that same day, I got asked to post a video parody of that onto our website that had related educational tones to electrical power. And I'm like, oh, that's enough.
So this it's strange to me because it's been number one since April. And that means that every baby born on planet Earth since April has only lived in a world where Old Town Road was number one. Right. And I said that to some neighbors who was hanging out by the pool a week ago Friday evening. And I just made that little joke to a bunch of neighbors. And they were like, what? What are you talking about? I'm like, Old Town Road? And no one had ever heard of it. And I felt like I was in the Twilight Zone. It's like, how could you have not heard of this song?
You were in your own version of the Yesterday movie where you can now write that, do that song and make millions and millions of dollars.
At first you're wondering and then you're like, how do I live the life that you live? How do I get away?
There's that too, yeah.
Let's see, here's a clip. How about this one? This is, where did it go? Here we go. Norm goes to town.
Hey, it's great to have a new neighbor. Woman lived here before you was nuts. Biggest bitch under the sun. Just a senile old hag, really. Wouldn't be surprised if someone just got fed up and offered her, you know what I mean? She was my aunt. Heart of gold, though. Just to a saint, really. And such
right
a
out of cheers.
For her age. Mm-hmm. Would you like some dinner?
It's totally out of cheers.
Yeah, exactly.
Right out of cheers.
All that's missing is Cliff and a laugh track. Like,
yeah.
Right, yes.
This is, they just asked him to come on and be Norm. All right, here's your, here's a good, I like this from him as well.
So, what's all this cameras for upstairs?
Do you believe in ghosts?
Well, what kind of ghosts?
My aunt thought this house was haunted.
No offense, Roger, but your aunt was Looney Tunes.
I like that. Your aunt was Looney Tunes. It's a good phrase. You're Looney Tunes. I'm going to use it more.
Yeah.
I like it.
Kids won't get it, but yeah.
Yeah, let's bring it back. Let's bring it back. Here's some bad dialogue.
Hi.
Sandy.
I tried to call, but there was no answer. I was worried about you, Roger.
What are you doing here?
I wanted to see you. What are you doing with that gun?
I know she's supposed to be kind of weird because she's about to be a creature. Okay? I get it.
Right.
But I don't like her.
Yeah, I don't like her. Yeah. I don't care for her attitude one bit, Missy.
I really don't.
I just don't like the acting. Oh. I can't imagine if you came along and were like, hi, and this was my response. Oh, hi.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I couldn't decide. I was like, oh, I hate that kind of character. But I was like, it kind of makes sense because she's in a divorce because she could never get her husband to move on about the child. And she wants to move on with life, but she still loves him. And it's very soap opera, right?
Yeah.
And so she kind of falls into, she's even doing soap opera now. So she kind of falls into that whole role and represents that culture. So in one ways I was annoyed because I hate it. In other ways, I'm like, well, how are you going to play it?
Did it ever make sense why the kid was sucked into the house?
I think he was actually kidnapped. And that's the reason why I think Roger Cobb's character, when that child is not his child, I think that is just his desire for his child.
But
to
you
return.
Don't think he's real. Okay. I mean, if he is real, what's a little bit weird is he hasn't aged. It's a little like Endgame or something where
that's why I think he's an apparition.
Peter Parker comes back and is like, it's five years later. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, we've seen movies, sci-fi movies before where somebody goes into another dimension and they don't age and then they come out of that other dimension and they're the same age they were when they were.
But it doesn't make sense that Big Ben is actually the thing that is haunting the house, because that's what you would have to believe, because you would believe that Big Ben came along and took the kid, but it didn't. The house took the kid. And so do I have it right
that Richard Mall wouldn't have done all this had what's his name just killed him and put him out of his misery?
Right. Mm-hmm. It was revenge. Yeah. But once again, this is William Katz.
That's shitty revenge, though. That's dumb revenge.
Right.
He didn't have the heart to kill his friend.
Why not haunt Roger's house instead of his aunt's house?
Yes.
I mean, even if you did know that that Roger was eventually going to go there.
But it's not even justified. It's like so wait, the guy who didn't have the heart to end you because because you were his friend. Now I'll get you one day through your aunt's haunted house. Like, come on.
What was presented doesn't make sense to me. And wherever that happens, my mind immediately starts thinking of other theories. So that's the reason why I cannot accept your reality.
We are shown the car that contains the kidnapped child squealing away.
Yeah, that's true.
We see, like, there is no doubt that the kid was kidnapped.
Right.
You know, like, I don't understand why that there isn't more made of that. Why do they show us that and then, okay, on with the rest of the movie?
Everything about that kid is handled weird. It's like kidnapping. They underreact. They think he's dead or he's gone or whatever from the family, and they're all, well, we just need to move on. Like, none of that happens in real life. Like, I just didn't buy any of that stuff. The kid to me was an anomaly. I didn't like it the way they handled it. I don't think anyone on that set understood kids, and I would point to the director's kid who they made cry for some reason and then filmed it.
I don't want to be in your stupid movie, Dad.
I hate this.
I don't want to be here.
I want to go home. It's awful. All right, here's the 21 Jump Street captain. I don't know if you guys noticed him, but here he is talking.
Mr. Cobb, I know this is a funny question, but you wouldn't happen to be the same Roger Cobb who wrote Blood Dance, would you?
Blood Dance. So that's what's his name? Got to find his name.
Mm. Yeah, he wore a mustache in the TV series. I always loved his.
Here he is, Stephen Williams. Stephen Williams. Yeah. And we all know him from a million things. He was in Blues Brothers. He was in X-Files. Right. He was in that recent It movie, Jason Goes to Hell. In fact, I think we saw him in Jason Goes to Hell. Let me watch that one.
Maybe I'm getting confused with his mustache in X-Files and not in 21 Jump Street. Or did he have
it
for both?
He had it for both, I believe. All right. He was in True Detective, the first True Detective season he was in.
Oh, the good one. Right. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I take that back. He's in the new one, which is supposed to also be good.
Oh. It's also good. Not as good as season one, but Mahershala Ali, man, elevates everything he's in.
He's for Supernatural fans who are all in mourning because their show's ending. He was Rufus Turner for a bunch of years.
How could you be mourning for Supernatural? It's ran for like, what, 20 seasons? I mean,
it's true.
It's a good run.
Yep. He was also in Minority Report, the TV show. Don't worry, Brian. It was just the TV show. Okay. It's a TV show.
Fine.
Short-lived TV show. And then Brian or Abbott and I would remember him from The Leftovers. He was in.
I like that show too.
Show. Yes.
Virgil, I guess
HBO's,
he played.
Yeah. HBO's show. Is it still running?
No, it had three seasons. It's all over with.
Three seasons, and ended. It ended exactly the way it needed to end. It was a good satisfying.
One of my favorite. Most satisfying series I ever saw. Mm-hmm. I just want to say
I agree with you, Brian. Like, there's plenty of Supernatural, but
right.
I can't help
Supernatural,
wishing,
but
I can't help wishing that there were going to be 40 more seasons because it could have been like the TV show version of a Richard Linklater Boyhood movie where we see these Winchester brothers get old.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I would like that. Now, don't get me wrong. I love Supernatural, and I've loved for a very long time. But I'm not devastated.
So what I'm calling for is not 40 more seasons of Supernatural. I'm calling for them to keep making like 3 episodes a year for the rest.
Just
of their
one
lives.
Would be fine.
That's all they have to do. So I have and to do then it. Give it to Richard Linklater, and he puts it all together.
Well,
so Roger Cobb. This character must have the most recognizable second look face you've ever seen because everybody, when they meet him, is like, I don't know this fella. Uh-huh. Wait, are you that Roger Cobb fella? Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Plus, those cops are just weird. I assume I had the weird assumption that they may also be haunted or they were part of the haunting because they were weird.
Yeah, that whole scene was weird because they came because the neighbor called because there was a shotgun shot. And so then William Katt's character runs back to the porch with his gun while the cops are already getting out of the car, sits down on the porch and starts whistling while cleaning the gun. It's the weirdest. Who, me? I've been here the whole time. You didn't just see me run out.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That's a weird scene.
Here's an 80s. Here's an 80s as shit sound in this movie.
All right.
Doesn't that that just fills me with either dread or nostalgia.
Like it's borrowed from a Nightmare on Elm Street film.
Yeah, it's really bad. All right, then I wrote, the hell is this? I don't remember what it is. Here we go. Yeah!
Feeling better.
Oh, yeah.
Now that we're through. Feeling better, because I'm over you.
It's so... Yeah. Terrible.
Right. Nobody walked out of the movie saying, oh, I got to go get that soundtrack.
Oh my gosh, dude.
But sadly, they sold one.
Did they?
True story.
Did they?
They sold one? They sold a soundtrack.
There's a soundtrack.
You
can purchase it.
They sold one.
You can purchase it on vinyl, cassette tape, and CD.
Here's this lady.
Oh no, don't be silly. I understand. I can tell when a man wants to work. I can also tell when a man wants to play. We should get together soon.
Ugh.
An accent that fades in and out too. Yeah, why isn't she watching her child? Why is she swimming around? I see no child anywhere.
Yeah.
And he's just running around the house eating scissors or something.
It felt like one of those sped up like chipmunk effects on her voice, and she's normally sounds like Yakov Smirnoff or something.
Right.
Like a sped up Yakov Smirnoff.
Right.
All right.
Come over to pool. Have fun. We'll play. Yeah. I know what men likes to play.
We will get together soon. You watch my kid? Okay, I'll be home late. Yeah, just like that. Here's I don't know what this is.
Oh, no. Don't be silly. I understand.
Oh, that's what I played earlier on the show. Never mind. All right. Here's, I wrote, what is this sound? I love when I find these. Okay, so let's do this mystery sound. What is this sound? Okay. I'll play it again. Listen again. Any ideas?
It's laughing, right? A little chuckle or something?
Is it? I don't know.
It's really funny, though.
I don't know what it is, but it caught me off guard. All right, and then this guy saying who. All right, that's it. All right, hey, there's your clips, everybody. Thanks for those. Here's this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. When Cheers met Night Court, check. Give Norm a fish in Elite for a day. Teach him to fish for William Catt in Elite for a lifetime.
Yeah, didn't even talk about the fish. Don't need to talk about the fish.
No, nope.
Watch the movie. Yep. See the fish.
Yeah, go watch the fish. Also, what is with that V-neck sweater? It's not really a check mark.
I like that sweater.
No, you don't.
I instantly hit the internet looking for that sweater.
Yeah, you're gonna. If you buy one, you get to take pictures of that and send it to us because I don't believe you'd ever wear it.
That's awesome.
Gonna make a bad sunburn too. That V-neck sweater.
Oh, yeah.
If you know me, you know I like a deep V.
Oh, yeah.
Deep V's come in three levels of deepness. There's sternum, there's belly button, and there's, that's a deep V.
Yeah. Sounds like hot new Veronica Belmont podcast where she just really gets into the nitty-gritty of life and daily life called Deep V. Get it now on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, I posted in the Discord chat a link to House 1 and 2, the remastered 180-gram LP of House 1 and House 2 soundtracks. So
wow.
Have that.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's Harry Manfredini, and I'll bet you anything that song's not on there. That's
got to be.
Covers on
okay.
there.
I will pack it up and turn it right back around if it's not on there.
We all agree, right? We all agree that Harry Manfredini chose that name to sound like Henry Mancini, right?
I think it's a made-up name like Kevin Klein gives in Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah.
My name is Harry Manfredini.
I'm just saying it reminded me of that movie Boiler Room where the name of the firm is J.T. Marlin so that people think that they're J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's like Tallmark.
Looking at the soundtrack... opening titles, The Abduction, Hey Raj, A Fiery Sandy Witch, Dingbat Attack, Secondhand, Viet Memories in the Chimney, Big Ben Chase, Cujo the Raccoon, Viet Rescue, Transparenti.
There you go. Transparenti.
Roger Gets a Hand and Close Shave. No mention of You're No Good.
Roger Gets a Hand.
Well, they don't even, it's so bad they didn't even include it. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh God, no, we're not putting that on.
Guys,
it wasn't worth the licensing. You know, they just said, well, we could put it on there, but we've got to pay X amount extra in licensing and nobody's going to buy it for this.
I could totally see that being the case. All right. Star Trek connections. There are a number of them. We mentioned one earlier, but Susan French, she was Aunt Elizabeth. She was on the original series. She played Sev Maylor in the sixth episode called The Man of the People. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Steve Susskind, he played Frank McGraw here. He was a pitchman in Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
I'm a pitchman.
Yep.
What pitch do you
man.
Want?
Everyone loves a pitchman. We mentioned the Michael Ensign character. He played Chet Parker. He was in TNG. Oh, he was in other stuff. TNG, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise as various alien characters. And then finally, Felix Sela played Little Critter. On TOS appeared as a Talosian in the pilot episode, The Cage. The Cage. Who's the little critter?
I'm a little critter.
That must have been one of the critters.
Is that the chimney critters?
Probably. Probably.
The Chuckies in the chimney. I still think that's one of my favorite things of this.
They look like Chuckies to me. They look like two Chuckies getting out of control up in there. Soundtrack great. I give it an EAS for 80s as shit. And let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up. In 280 characters or less, let's start with Randy.
House. This place has it all. People who hide in the closet and you have to go in with them. Women who appear out of nowhere. A crazy neighbor who just lets himself in and catches you doing whatever you're doing. Just like a Saturday night at Ibbotson.
I saw that coming.
A Friday night. Yeah. Both nights.
Every night. Brian Dunaway.
House. Like trying to flee from a murder scene on a moped. You can't get away fast enough. I am the grocery boy.
Nice. I like that one a lot. And finally, Brian.
I fumbled
Ibbot.
All over that, and it's not really a murder scene, much as a suicide scene. Let me correct that.
That's all right. You call autocorrect really effed with your
suicide
tweet. It's fine.
Suicide scene.
It's totally fine. My wife just brought my glasses. Thank you.
Now I can see my notes.
Now I can see. Finally, Mr. Brian Ibbett.
House. It's the Jufros versus the bald guy in this rubber horror battle royale.
Rubber horror. That's like horror. A staring at light night at Ibbett's house. Yeah. Autocorrect.
Maybe that's the genre. Maybe it's rubber horror.
Yeah, rubber horror.
Rubber horror.
It's a night horror. Court at Ibbett's house. I like that too.
Making Existence look like a Oscar winner.
No true kidding. Story. Oh, look at this.
This actually won some Saturn Awards, believe it or not.
Shut up. That's not true.
They used to have nothing to give them to. The Saturn right. Awards were like, we only have three movies in all categories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nominated. I'm sorry. No, he did. The director won. But
won a Critics Award, but not a Saturn.
Right. Only not a Saturn. Nominations.
Yeah. Richard Mull and Kalins were nominated a year. Right. Oh, in 1987. A year later, it seems like. But I guess that'd be right.
Yeah, makes sense.
The calendar year, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, these were just handed to me. I better read them. There's a little sheet of paper. It says here, there were alternate titles, and there were two of them. It was almost called, "This Movie Really Isn't the Norm."
Norm!
And "The Greatest American Homeowner." That's interesting.
That one was clever.
Yeah.
So the first one, funny. Yeah, second one, clever. I like it.
Funny and clever. The Adventures of Funny and Clever.
Yeah.
Check this out. Email time. We get emails from our listeners. They send those emails into filmsack@gmail.com. Today's no different. We got one from Miles Kaplan, who wrote in and says, "Hello, Scott, Brian, Miles. And Randy." He mentions like six Brians on
Lots
here.
Lots of Brians, yeah. Sure.
So thank you for all the wonderful sacks. Longtime listener, first-time emailer, he says. In the email section of episode 416, the one about the mummy, Shay Edwards asks the question referenced the start of Lonely Island's Jizz in My Pants. Shay promised 100 internet points, and I'm here to collect since it is one of my favorite film sack moments. So the thing was, it didn't really explain it here, but she had put out, or he or she, I don't know who Shay was, put out a challenge. Who can find where Randy made that mention? And he found it. So here it is. It's from the clips section of episode 111 about the net. Randy mentions the scream sound of some villain falling off a scaffolding, sounding like the opening of Jizz in My Pants. He gave me timestamps and everything, and I went and verified.
I don't even remember that at all. Did you locate it to play? Or?
I don't have it to play because it's kind of a pain, but he went over to overcast.fm and found the timestamp in the show. He also included the preamble. It's about an hour and 10 minutes into the episode if people are looking for it. Anyway, says thank you for the innumerable hours of entertainment and happy sacking for many more years to come.
Nice. I approve of this game type.
He does say at the bottom, P.S., it's Miles Kaplan at the bottom. He says, P.S., if it ever comes to on streaming, Sneakers would be a great movie to sack. Great old tech to mock the great James Horner.
We did Sneakers.
Did we not do Sneakers? That was like an early one we did.
I thought we did Sneakers, but I think we didn't do Sneakers. I'm going to actually look.
I think I did it as a recommendal.
I'm going to look right now. Sneakers.
I swore we did Sneakers.
Sneakers is one of my favorite movies ever. So I would remember, I think, but I'm going to still.
I know we did Hackers. Didn't we do Hackers? But we talked about maybe doing Sneakers as a follow-up.
Yeah,
to
Sneakers
Hackers,
never got done. I would gladly do Sneakers just because I get to watch Sneakers again. I love that movie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I also think it's sackable because it's good and good to talk about. Yeah, Sneakers is rad. Yeah. It's a fantastic freaking film.
And it's tech that isn't like, you know, dumbed down for Hollywood, right? It's not like, we need to enter the codes or the bomb's going to go off.
No, its reputation, I think, hinges on the fact that they get that stuff right.
Yeah.
And then everything else on top is gravy. It's great ensemble cast. Everybody's incredible. Dan Aykroyd, one of my favorite roles ever. It's just great. So, I think we could make that happen if we can get it streaming again. Streaming now?
Yeah, absolutely.
No.
Yeah, it is only for purchase right now. Okay. You can purchase it just about anywhere.
It was Sneakers, on Netflix not that long ago. It was on Netflix as I watched it again, and then it got pulled. So we'll have it come around again. When it comes around, that's when we'll get it. That was me singing Green Day. Enjoy.
Nice little Green Day, yeah.
We heard.
If you would like to send emails in like Miles, you can do so. Filmsack@gmail.com, filmsack@gmail.com. Or you can leave a voicemail, 801-471-0462. Our next film is not a film. We're doing another watch along because we have another summer travel.
I'm gonna be in Vegas.
That's right, celebrating a wonderful life. It's a wonderful life.
Wow. Okay.
All savings alone.
Apparently, apparently what you think what happens in Vegas is Brian dies.
No, I don't mean that. But it's going to be a grand time for him. And as a result, we're not going to be here. So we want to make sure we leave you with something. So we'll do, actually, it looks like we're going to do a DS9 episode of Star Trek. We like doing Star Trek episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do that. And then the week after that, Randy, I forgot the name. Can you remind us?
Cloud Atlas.
Cloud Atlas, that's it. Yeah. Which I always confuse with
Jupiter Ascending.
I almost said Mercury Rising.
Those are really, really not even close to the same.
Well, they're
movie,
both produced by the Wachowskis, which is the one thing that ties
them
together.
Yeah, but they're nothing alike.
Right. Cloud Atlas, based on a really popular book. I don't know about Jupiter Ascending. But whenever you say Jupiter Ascending, I think of Mercury Rising. Aren't those two different things? Another movie?
Bad Moon Rising.
Yeah, Bad Moon Rising.
We actually need to do Mercury Rising. That's
Venus in the seventh house or something like
that. Wait, what is Mercury Rising?
Bruce Willis. Could say it.
Yeah. Bruce Willis, Miko Hughes, and Alec Baldwin. A movie from 98. Yeah. It was shadowy elements in the NSA target a 9-year-old autistic savant for death when he is able to decipher a top secret code. Oh my lord, put it on the list.
Yeah. It's good stuff. It's on the Cinemax.
Wow. I don't have the Cinemax.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah.
Everybody can have Cinemax for 2 weeks free.
Oh,
come
Brian,
on.
Yeah, but you also love Kim Dickens. She's in this. Kim Dickens.
I do like Kim Dickens.
Yeah. Oh, I love the Kim Dickens.
She's great.
Peter Stormare's in it. Oh, we have to watch this. Kevin Conway.
Totally got to put it on the list.
Yeah. I've never even heard of this.
Oh, I love that movie.
Missed it entirely. All right.
Love it.
All right. We get a little Bruce Willis in here. That'd be good. Been a while. When's the last Bruce Willis movie we did? Die Hard?
No.
Hudson Hawk?
That was before Die Hard. We did that before Die Hard.
Yeah. Hudson Hawk.
Way before.
I can't think of anything else.
Something that he maybe had a small cameo in. I mean, I'm looking through our. I guess we've kind of cleared things out, but.
I just watched Pulp Fiction again, and I'm thinking of that, but I know we didn't do that.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think we need some Willis
last
in our
Boy
lives.
Boy Scout?
I don't think we did it.
Oh, that's old too. Yeah.
We haven't done that. We should do that.
You haven't done that one?
Nope. Oh. Do you guys notice we are at the stage where it does feel like we've done them all?
Yeah.
It is totally really hard.
We've done 425 movies, it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy how that translates.
It's going to happen too, you know?
Yeah.
Remember when we sacked Hobbs and Shaw?
Tom really liked that.
It's
going to
happen. We're eventually going to accidentally do it, you know, something twice. It's gonna happen.
You think? No,
not accidentally, but maybe on purpose.
Yeah, I can't see us doing it accidentally, because I would see it in the I always search the RSS, so we'd find it.
Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. But you're
gonna Fifth Element. Didn't we do Fifth Element?
Oh, we just did. Duh. That's like 4 weeks ago. We totally did. You're right.
Yeah.
All right.
So satisfied.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Ibbitt.
Okay.
That's gonna do it for today's show. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget, you can go to the website, filmsack.com. It's got all our archives, all the ways to get us, all that stuff. Get us wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us reviews if you want to. And find us on Twitter, @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Roger!
We'll see you next time. Whoa. That didn't work. Hold on. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
You'd be no longer drawing breath in Miami.
I just couldn't find another file.
Miami.